It's the big show. Yes, we're here to discuss the big technology stories of the week and how fab they've all been and how wonderful technology is at the moment. Ish. Joining me to discuss the week in tech, an absolute fab panel. Really, really good. Starting us up top left, it's Lee Pearson. How the devil are you, mate?
Oh, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, just basking in this lovely UK weather we've got at the moment. It's probably going to end on the weekend, but never mind.
Of course. Now, great guitar show episode, mate. Finally got the solo up for Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Yeah, cheers for that.
Yeah, sorry, mate. It took me a while. But I've had, you know firsthand that I've had a fair old bit on.
Yeah, no problems.
Just a little bit.
Just a bit busy,
but we're done. Today, we've actually managed to finish the working parts of the studio. So I've got the little roaming camera, so I'll take you around for a little trot about in a few minutes. Next to him, it's Doc. How you doing, buddy?
Aloha. Good morning. Welcome to the club.
What's going off, pal?
Man, just been super, super busy on a project for one of the resorts out here. I was up until like 3:30 in the morning lasering, and when I was done, I was like, man, this would be great if Mac Show was on, because I could just go and do it before I fall asleep.
Yeah. No, sorry, mate, that's tomorrow. Tomorrow.
It's pretty awesome, though.
You're on?
Yeah.
Good. Next to him, it's Dr. House. Go on, Kelly, explain why I'm calling you Dr. House.
Okay, so I've blown out my knee and I'm wearing a brace that is like covering 80 to 90% of my entire leg. It's just Velcro all the way down. And I have to
I've got
around.
A dress like that. No, I haven't. Shit. Go on, sorry. No, you have a limp.
I do. I have to crutch for the next 2 weeks.
So and you walk with a cane and you are reliant entirely on Vicodin.
I am indeed.
Yes. What a show we'll have later when she takes the next one. And last but by no man's least, it's Righty Boy.
Oi, boy.
I'm all right, buddy. Now then, what's happened in your world?
Possible career changes coming up on the horizon.
Good man.
Embracing technology. Apparently the role of the IT technician is a dinosaur, and I'm being forced to move on, but it's all good. And I think it's all changed for the better. So in the next couple of weeks, I should be smiling even more than I am right now.
Excellent, mate. Good to hear that. Batwench says, you must be joking. Nice weather. She's had to put the heating on. Even if it's not sunny, mate, we're still closer to the sun. It's still warm. You shouldn't need the heating on, girl. Get your temperature. Yeah. See if you're all right. There we go. Oh, well. How do you fancy a quick tour around the updated BTN towers?
Yes, please.
Because I've got the old roaming camera here. Here we go, put it down to there. So if I undo that and then pick this up, you're going to see quite a change, because there's an awful lot that's happened since the last time we did a little roving camera thing. So I've got all my guitars here now, which I didn't have before. And the whole lighting rig has now got diffusers on it. So you can actually stare at the lights and it doesn't hurt your eyes. The cameras are much more neatly positioned and it's cabled in. I've got a bit of cabling work to do. The monitor speakers are up and working as well as. Mm-hmm. And the side's fairly clear, apart from the washing up, of course. But the reason that it's actually a bit deader in terms of noise in here is that I've got some little sound baffles up everywhere. So they will stop the noise quite well. And I've even got one on the ceiling in the alcove as well, to stop it. And the lighting has been done as well. So there we go. There's the lighting for the green screen. So the green screen's significantly better than it was because of that. And I've got a light that lights me up too. So effectively now, this room, the web room, is completely and utterly finished. So there you go. There's an awful lot of shit in the other rooms, but never mind. And the other thing that's changed is the wall of shame.
Oh, yes.
So if I come down here, I'm down the stairs and I'm over. I'm just going to put the light on. There's my front door. But one thing that you'll notice straight away is that the wall of shame has got an awful lot bigger. There you go.
Oh, love it.
So there are absolutely tons. There's Sam and Chiz from the Gamer Show. Sam wanted to be like he was in Total War, so he's a Centurion. And Chiz wanted to be Solid Snake. That is Don McAllister through and through. That's Don McAllister. That's exactly what he looks like.
Perfect.
Greeny's there. Tom's there. There's Batwenches on the wall as well. And Jeff's. And Gazmaz. That's definitely Gazmaz. And there's Andy Vaughan. There he is. Vaughny. And Shads. Now, that one is definitely Shads. Look at that. Paul Shadwell, without a doubt.
Oh, yes. Looks exactly like you.
And there's Mr. Peterson. Look. But you don't think he looks like you?
No, no, it does. It does.
James Hart, Steve Neighbor.
I love the Nanny's Nails t-shirt.
Kelly. Yeah, that was wore that last week, I think, didn't I?
There's Kelly G and Len. And there's Muller. He's up. Now, you'll notice Andy Latko. So that's the whole wall of shame.
You notice that Kelly had her Hello Kitty watch.
You will notice that we've got a couple left over here that I need to put up. And the only reason that they're not put up, that's Glenn's, he's had his done this week. They're going to go up because A, I ran out of tape, and B, me OCD won't let me put three up on a wall that needs four.
Oh, fair enough.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is the BTN Wall of Shame. If you would like to be on the BTN Wall of Shame, all you've got to do is send us an email to btncaricatures@gmail.com and then get a caricature done by Len Peralta. And we will put you up on the Wall of Shame. And we've got all that space to fill all the way up the stairs, look. And all this space here, we will fill this with caricatures. So if you'd like one, then do it. It's great fun. And loads of people are now using them as their Twitter avatars as well as. So absolutely superb. I'm knackered now. I'm on the way. I've got a plant as well. I've got a plant at the top of the stairs just to soften everything up. And I've also got a fantastic picture of this girl here, this lady Holly. I shot her a few years ago. But that's a board that that completely covers the whole wall. Stuck on.
Wow.
Lovely, lovely lady.
That's huge.
It is. It's well, it's the height of the ceiling, and, yeah. And it's as wide. So there you go. That's the update to the BTN Towers. Did it all crackle up, or was it all right?
A little bit, but not too bad.
That's okay then. Jolly good. And we're back. So no, we've done loads of work. Last Saturday, Sharon and I came in because we had some friends around on the Saturday, supposedly. But it was going to piss down with rain, so we said, do you fancy coming Sunday instead? So Saturday we came up here and we just blitzed everything. And then Sunday, Ellis came up with me and built all the noise baffles. Well chuffed. Well chuffed. The Week in Tech, what's been going on? Who wants to start us off with their story?
I can kick off if you want.
Go for it.
So a big thing for me as a bit of a gamer was E3.
Yeah.
On this week. So I wanted to say the main thing I'm looking forward to, but also get everyone else's thoughts, see what they were looking forward to. So, I mean, for me, the main one was Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront. Not a massive fan, to be honest, of the later sort of Battlefront games. But the Star Wars Battlefront games are some of my favourite games kind of all the time. We've not had one for, about 10 years or so. Looking at all the footage, the player, the in-game stuff just looks stunning. They've got the graphics, the sounds. It all seems to be in keeping with kind of the look and feel of the original ones, if anyone, you know, used to play those games. So I know it's a few months left. I've already pre-ordered it. I just, for me... That's the main one. But also, there's a few things. Star Fox as well. And the Nintendo announced a new Star Fox, which is another one of my kind of all-time faves too. So I don't know what you guys' thoughts on Battlefront or anything else you're looking forward to.
The footage for Battlefront, the new one, looks absolutely amazing. You know, I haven't got a next-generation console yet, but I watched that and I thought I'd need to buy one. That's the selling point for me.
We're just trying to wade our way through a Microsoft advert there. Apparently the content is inappropriate for children, so that's perfect. Right up our street.
Oh, hurrah.
But the following is actual multiplayer gameplayer footage from captured from a PlayStation 4, which is quite rare, actually, isn't it? Because normally it usually ends up with a little tag that says not in-game footage.
Yeah.
So. I think Sony did well, I think. They've kind of got this footage from PlayStation 4, obviously beat Microsoft to that one, but they also... They've got some of the Call of... I'm not a huge Call of Duty player, to be honest, anymore, but they've got the early access beta testing for that too. So I think Sony for me are running rings around Microsoft when it comes to next gen consoles. But I'm a bit of a Sony fanboy when it comes to games consoles.
I like the Xbox One. I think the Xbox One does pretty well. I'm quite happy with it.
I like the fact that you just said that, Lee, because for the most part, this is absolutely true. But the game changer actually finally got a release date this week. And that was The Division. And I mean, it's going to be on all the platforms, but as a next gen platform game, I literally bought my Xbox One because I thought The Division was coming out back in March of this year. And it got delayed for almost a year. And part of that is they just bit more than they could chew. The other part of it is Tom Clancy passed away in the middle of the production of the game. But I can't wait to see this. The whole process of the way this game is played is like absolutely insane. If you haven't seen the previews, which I'll post in the chat room right now, I suggest you take a look at it, especially if you're this kind of, it looks almost similar to, you know, Battlefront, but it's a post-apocalyptic New York-y thing. It's pretty sick.
I love the fact he's shooting at a TIE fighter with a pistol.
If you take the original, like the old PlayStation 1 or PlayStation 2 games, which I used to play to death, this is so in keeping with that, especially this level. I've got it on the Vita. I got the PS Vita, and I downloaded the PS Classic version of it, and I still play it. It proof will be in the pudding here. And if it does come out, and there's a delay, or if it does actually come out when they've said it will, I think there's a lot of pressure on the studio to bring it out in November, because you got obviously Episode 7 coming out in December. So I think they can't miss their delivery date. So, you know, if there's footage is anything to go by, then, and I think they're on the right tracks in terms of getting it ready.
Did they give a release date yet?
Yeah, it's November the 17th, I think, or the 11th. I'll just double check it, but it's kind of mid-November.
And then I'm making a reminder.
December, middle of December.
Yep, I'm making a reminder. I'm on it. Let's see.
So a bit of a question, because I came to the Xbox quite late, and I'm staying on the Xbox 360 because on Goldwig, they're giving us loads of free games every month that are great. With the next-gen consoles, is it just the graphics that are improved, or is the gameplay actually better?
Combination of both. The graphics are always going to get improved with every new console. That's just kind of the default nature of the way it is. But you're dealing with a total advancement in game engine and AI, and you know, guys not running into the mountain and like standing there, and you know, you run into like certain older games like Halo, and you'll have a baddie just like in the corner, I don't know, looks like he's having a party with himself. That kind of stuff goes away because they're much more intelligent now.
Especially something like Grand Theft Auto. If you look at Grand Theft Auto 5 on the PS4 compared to say the PS3, if you look at, just do a YouTube on that, and you can see the differences. I played it on PS3 and PS4, and the difference is massive. In terms of draw distances and things like that, you know, in terms of what you can see in the distance and the amount of stuff going on, the amount of cars on the road, all that kind of stuff, it can just do more.
I think I think
for me, it's always the games that tie me to the console. So I had an Xbox, so I'm a big fan of Halo and Alan Wake, and I know there's potentially an Alan Wake game coming out for Xbox One, so I may be getting an Xbox One if that comes out, but this is
Batwench, she's chiming in. She's saying she's never seen a character having a wank in any game she's ever played. Thanks, Doc. And also, she obviously doesn't need much help tonight. The thing I was going to say was that the platform creates the volume, if you like, of utilization, but then it's down to the game to utilize that. And all of them will tend to go with the graphics, but the AI stuff and the gameplay seems to be, you know, very much down to whether they've got enough imagination to be bothered to write the code to deal with that. So there's a lot of games are still hanging on to and plugging effectively the old engine and the old stuff that they had to try and make it happen, rather than looking at improving the AI on top. It does the same old crap time in, time out. And I'm thinking particularly there of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know what I'm pretty amazed at is I of course, you guys, without even guessing, I play FIFA on the Xbox One. And one of the things I'm pretty amazed at is in sports is a lot of times where you get the really dumb AI when you play in a sports game. And I am very, very impressed at the intelligence that the defenders and the goalies and some of the other people have in the game now. But not only just that, just it has proper ball mechanics now. Used to be able to take shots that were impossible or do things with the ball that just would never happen in real life. And now they've kind of slowly but surely each progressive year taking that stuff away. And that's because the processor can do it. And so the ball mechanics are so good. When you do a slow motion on a shot and say you do a cheeky Rooney curler into the top corner, as does happen in real life, the ball will, you'll see the ball compress and not spin, and as the ball expands it begins to spin, and that's how you do a proper, you know, Rooney, Ronaldo, you know, Gareth Bale kind of curler. That's how you do it. And it actually shows up in a game like that now. And before, you just had this dumb pixelated sprite that would just move and bounce in directions that are impossible. And so it's really coming out in all the games, to be honest with you, but pretty impressive stuff nonetheless.
It's the Gamer Show.
Well, no, I was just about to say, actually, if you like your gaming and you want a better, more fuller coverage, if you like, of what went on at the E3, then check out Monday night, because Sam, Chiz and Paul will be dissecting E3, looking at all the stuff that took place and all the things that impact you, and not just Battlefront. But I've got to say, Lee, Battlefront looked very good there. I'm not a great one for shoot-em-ups, but I think I might end up buying that, because it's almost as well, it was like Battlefield, wasn't it? You know, where you could climb in anything, drive anything, fly anything, do anything, which is always really cool. Any idea on prices on that, or was it just a straight launch?
Well, it depends where you buy it from. You know, if you... There's like an edition already that I looked on PS4 where you can pre-order, and it's like £79, but I just pre-ordered it on you went Amazon. For like 49 quid, I think it was. So normal price for a game, normal price for a
PS4. Yeah, okay. I was going to say, £79 is...
Lee, you still get the disc, or you like the digital download?
Disc. I always get the discs, because I always trade them back in. So we can buy our UK store's game, and they're a bit of a rip-off on pre-owned games if you're buying them, but they give you a pretty good value if you're trading back something new. And what I tend to do is just stack them up for a while and then just take like 4 or 5 games in that I've not played for ages and get some of the money back on them.
I can't. I just keep everything. I can't. I don't do that. I don't know what it is in my hoarder. There you go. Maybe that's it. Double Kelly. Yeah, I've sorted that now. Ball mechanics are important for those with broken balls, says Deep Pen. Broken balls, that might be it then. And what do you mean your balls are advanced, Paul?
Ask the wife.
Oh, okay. So when's she on next week?
Yeah, get her on.
Superb. Really good. Good story, mate. Good story to kick us off. Thank you. Who's got the next one?
I posted mine in. It should be the second to the last link that was dropped.
You can't have yours, Kelly, because you haven't posted it in the chat room.
Yes, I did. Oh, no, I didn't.
No,
I
you didn't.
Make it in.
Okay, there it is. That's all right. You get out of it. No worries. It's Doc anyway. He said he bagsied. Go on, Doc.
So we're going to do our second BTN show crossover story, but just not really so much about the story itself. I'll let that be covered by the Pocket Show, but I want to talk about, I guess, sort of the information that moves around it, right? And so yesterday there was a story that rolled out that 600 million phones are vulnerable to this remote code hack on Samsung Galaxy phones. And two reasons why I wanted to bring this up. So first, let me explain the hack. It's relatively simple. There's a process that goes on with updating files and updating, various games in it. And SwiftKey, a very popular app, somehow has a backdoor in it that allows someone to come in and take over your phone. And Samsung knows about it. SwiftKey knows about it. SwiftKey and them are working on trying to get it closed up. But basically what happens is, you know, it's just the way that the update happens. Even though you set security on the phone, that gives you like that highest level security, like almost I'm paranoid phone. And the vulnerability still lets you in to parts unknown that you're not supposed to have access to. And two things I wanted to bring up about the story. One is, considering this is 600 million phones and considering that this was a buggy hacky type of thing, as I searched around the web looking for more and more information, I found it on Ars Technica, of course, and then Forbes, CNN, Wall Street Journal, the major press covered it, but like Mashable, Verge, a lot of the people didn't even touch it. And the reason why I thought this was a little bit hilarious, because if somebody were to send, say, an Aramaic Chinese, Indian, and Russian text. It's in the press for like 8 weeks because, well, the iPhone is doomed. Or if somebody was to be an idiot and grab a metal phone and bend it in half, and Ewan hates when I say idiot, but let's put it where it goes. Again, it hits the press for like 3 to 4 weeks. Now, here's something that affects 750 million phones, and it barely got spoke of yesterday. So it's funny to me how this goes down still. And I guess the other thing is, it's a good public service thing, not because there's a vulnerability, but this is something that has helped people who not really aware of be aware of. And so I want to get your guys' ideas on this hacktivism type thing where these guys are purposely breaking stuff and leaking how you break it. And it's kind of the thing that nobody would really actually do.
Well, hang on a second, Doc, because what you've just done is exactly the same kind of thing. Because you've taken the story and you've used it to show about bad journalism associated with Apple. You haven't talked about this story at all.
No. I'm wondering, like, the hacktivism side of it. Do you guys like this idea where these guys are they doing it, I guess, really for, and not even just the journalists, before we get to the journalists, these hacktivist guys, are they doing it so that they can get known? Or, like, why wouldn't you quietly explain to someone, like, how to fix it? And I know in most cases, some guys do. They say you contact the company. The company doesn't do anything about it. Then they tell everybody.
Right.
But then there's the guys that as soon as they get it, they go straight to all of the press people to tell them and then kind of force the hand of, you know, your Apple or your Samsungs or your Microsofts or whomever to go and attack it. So I guess one, I wanted your instance on the hacktivism side, and the other instance on, do you see that there is an unfairness in the way these things are reported?
There's absolutely unfairness, but it's because nobody will click on a Samsung link. Like, that's what it is. You can say what you want about Samsung being great and wonderful and fantastic, and nobody's going to click on it. If you say it about Apple, then you're going to get some hits. And if you talk about the end of Apple and Apple's ultimate demise for all of these reasons, then people are totally going to click on that. And they don't click on it when it's Samsung. I don't understand why. Samsung is a bigger company. They do more than just phones. And it seems like something that should be equal time, in particular in a case like this where it's a security issue. Like, it doesn't matter what phone you prefer. It matters what phone you have. And if you have a phone and something bad could happen to it, then this should be a thing that everybody gets to know about. It's like a public service.
Well, hang on, though, but isn't there an issue there in that most of the people that watch blogs aren't Samsung phone owners? They're iPhone owners. So they're more likely to respond to an iPhone thing, because the average person, say, you know, the young girl who runs or works at the shop at the corner has got a Samsung Galaxy. She's someone who bought it because she went into phones for you and they said you should have this because it's a good phone. And she doesn't look technology blogs in the eye at all.
Right. But that's why this should have been, this is the kind of thing that should have gotten regular mainstream coverage, which Doc was saying that it did, which I was glad to hear, because a lot of times stuff like this doesn't get that. And then when it does, it's all just about how it's just trying to scare you instead of trying to relate to you. There's something that could happen to your phone. These are the steps that you take to make sure that doesn't happen to you.
Mm.
The end. And so I thought it was interesting that Doc was saying that it did get, you could see it on CNN and Forbes and some of these other more mainstream places, because I write for Mac Observer. If you have an Android phone and you have a Galaxy tablet, I don't presume that you read a lot of stuff I write, but I would presume that you have a casual awareness of news in the world, and maybe you are a technology person. So you're going to read some of that stuff. Like, the article I have is from Ars Technica. They cover all kinds of technology, and so does Engadget and, you know, all those guys. Like, there's general tech blogs out there, and this is the kind of thing that should have gotten at least a mention on some of those places. And like, the girl at the shop might read Mashable, because there's a lot of interesting stuff on Mashable that isn't necessarily about my phone. So it's the kind of thing that this is exactly the kind of story I wish would just get regular, even-handed mainstream coverage that usually doesn't. So I'm surprised to see that it did.
Bookery in the chat room is chiming in. Samsung story ? Why are they writing about microwave ovens?
I take back the penalty, iBookery, because I agree with you on that note.
Rob says there's just as many Android fanboys as there are Apple fanboys.
Oh, I'd say there's more, actually, but that's because it's cooler not to be Samsung. Anti at this point.
Yeah. But and Ken K says they did contact Samsung. The biggest problem is how updates are pushed out to the phones. And I think the other problem is whether updates are pushed out at all, because Android is an awful lot down to the carrier.
Yes.
Well, you know, one thing that you slightly touched on, and I kind of want to expand upon that because I think it's a good thing. One thing that you mentioned, and I guess I'll explain it differently, is you definitely would know that a lot more people who are, I guess you would call, I don't even know what the right word is to say, PC wise, let's say the lower income or lower technology based people will often terms have a Samsung phone because it's a cheaper entry point. Like you can get into one for as low as, you know, 40, 50 bucks.
If that.
And then so those are, in a way, the vulnerability is bigger because, like Kelly mentioned, they're not out reading tech blogs. You know, most of the people that have that kind of phone. Also, you think about the people that buy these, let's call them weaker devices for their kids because, well, that's all you deserve. You get a smartphone, but nothing fancy. So let me go and get you a OnePlus One or something. And not a Samsung directly, but, you know, it's a good example of a cheaper phone. So if there's a vulnerability in the Android sec based off of something like that, you know, it seems like the story would be bigger because they're more likely to be someone that would get taken by this vulnerability because they're not following tech blog. They're not really paying attention. They're getting updates and, you know, not really tech savvy. So in a way, as Kelly mentioned, for public service, this should be more spoken about, you know, because there's more chance of it actually doing harm to people outside of just the phones. It depends on what information gets leaked and how it gets leaked and whatnot. So there's that side of it.
And I'm not trying to deny that there are Android fanboys, and I'm not trying to deny that there are Android sites out there. You know, I'm sure somebody has built the unofficial Android weblog and, you know, like everything else. Like, I know that stuff is out there. I know it gets a lot of coverage, and I know that there are people who are way into that. You know, that's part of where the Pocket Show comes from. Like, I'm not that person. I have an awareness of Android. I know what it is. I know what it does. I have a Nexus 7 tablet, and I'm familiar with how it works, but I'm also a technology person, not just an Apple technology person. So I have some awareness of all of those things. Like, I'm a technology enthusiast, you know, with what I, and, you know, I definitely prefer Apple stuff overall, but I like all of those things. And so I'm paying some attention to that. What I find is that, like Doc was talking about, people who buy Android devices who maybe are looking for a budget phone, those aren't necessarily people who read any kind of blog. Like, they get their news from, I was going to say Brian Williams, but it's not Brian Williams anymore. They get their news from the network news at night over dinner and maybe a morning show while they get ready for work. Maybe listen to some news in the car to and from work, that kind of thing. Maybe read the paper. Mm-hmm. They're not people who are reading news necessarily online, and particularly technology news online. And it's just because it's not their interest. Like, I know people who have iPhones who are not technical people who spend a lot of time on technology sites, but by far the people I know who are sort of doing other things and kind of have a phone, like, so they can get their email, but they were doing it like budgetarily. Those folks, almost all of them are using Android. I find far more of those folks are Android users than are iPhone users.
Mm. Well, what's going to be interesting, I think, on this one is enterprise. Because I work for a large company, and we use Samsung's, for our work phones, and we've got, you know, a software on there to enable us to get our email and calendars and all that kind of stuff. So right. I'm interested to know how they're going to react to this, because I think certainly from where I've been sat, Samsung did a real push, especially with like I said, the company that I work for. And they pushed a lot of the Apple stuff out and everyone's got Samsung stuff. So, that's the side of it that I'm curious about, because obviously, you know, key login is not good in an enterprise situation. So it's going to be interesting to see maybe even if Apple come back at them and say, look, maybe there's potential for them to get back into enterprise a bit more. Especially, I know Apple obviously got most of the enterprise, but, you know, certainly from some of the companies in the UK that I've worked with recently, or like I said, that I work for, it's all Samsung. One thing I was going to notice, there was an exploit a few days ago, wasn't it, based on Apple stuff. And I don't know what the coverage was like of that in the States. Certainly from where I was looking, it didn't It didn't get a massive amount of press, the Apple exploit that was in iOS and macOS as well. But did you find that in the States that didn't have much coverage, or it had a lot of coverage?
It kind of gets, I would say that was medium compared to normal. It wasn't as big as normal, but I was really amazed at how much coverage got on the text thing. Cause like, that's so far fetched. Like, you got to have somebody be an absolute putz to send it to you. I mean, we were sending it to each other so we could try to figure it out before we figured out what the fix was. But the average person wasn't going around sending everybody that text, but I swear it got covered. It got covered so much. I was like, really? Like, this is a thing? And then, of course, yeah, if you read the social streams after that, everyone's going to see, look, it's not, your walled garden doesn't protect you, blah, blah. So it really just becomes ammunition for flame bodies to flame body each other. But it was pretty stupid in the end. And then there's the Ben gate and the scratch gate and the watch gate and the BTN gate and the you ain't got new lights in the studio gate. I'm like, I'm really irritated with all of that crap because you never hear anything about SwiftKey gate. Like, I haven't heard gate attached to anything on any other device. No. So I don't know. I think it's just that, you know, my grandma used to say the more the monkey climbs the mountain, the higher his ass is exposed. And that's why Apple's a target. We get it. But it's just, you know, I guess more importantly, as long as the people who need to see this stuff is seeing it, then it's okay. If it's just creating flame wars and link bait, it's not okay. And I guess it's up to us, which is why we do this show, to try to help people, you know, and get it in the right hands. And so, you know, I posted a link in the chat for anybody who does happen to have a Galaxy. Here's how you fix it. That's more important, but you hardly ever see that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for posting the link, Doc.
Thank you.
Keyboard shortcut. I'll put the link in the show notes. If I actually bothered to do show notes this week, because I didn't do them last week, sorry. I will do them. I will do them. I promise. Honest. Good one. Good one. Kelly, what was yours?
Well, before I do mine, I want to take a moment and talk about how last week I was gone because I was at AltConf in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And I had no way to do it. And so I just want to take a moment and do my little I was right dance about how there's finally reproductive health tracking in HealthKit.
Yeah, we mentioned you on the show last week.
I got my way. I got my way. I'm super excited.
Surely that's not what you got. It doesn't track what you got. It doesn't track you got your way. It tracks that you got something else, didn't it?
Well, I'm not using HealthKit to track that. I'm actually building a separate app in order to track the times that I was right and when I got my way.
Christ.
So, yeah, if the HealthKit could track every time a woman was right, then we'd have a whole different app.
You couldn't cope with that much data.
Oh,
if it tracked every time I was right with my wife, then that'd be pointless.
That's impressive. An app I can probably do. Yeah.
What about track when they bring up stuff from like 5 years ago to rub it in your face now?
Kelly, go on.
That sounds like, no, I'm sorry. I'm actually
moving on. Moving on. Do the story.
Yeah. This is sort of a US-centric a US-centric story, but I wanted to talk about it because I think it's an interesting pointer toward, hopefully, the way of things to come. Verizon, New York City, had a deal with Verizon that Verizon was going to bring fiber to a whole bunch of parts of New York City, and it didn't happen. All of this stuff was supposed to be done. They were supposed to basically have Fios throughout all five boroughs by June 30th, 2014.
Well, according to the story, it says to all households.
Yeah.
And that's got, what's that, 15 million?
Yeah, it's a lot. But they made the agreement in 2008. And at the time, Verizon was like, yes. And it was supposed to be done a year ago and isn't. And the reason that this is interesting to me is because New York City's not letting it slide. They're holding Verizon accountable. This is one of those things where somebody is standing up to a large corporation, large organization. I mean, it could be government, it could be whatever. But somebody is standing up and saying, no, you're going to be accountable for this. You said you were going to do this thing, and now it needs to be done. And we're going to hold you to this. And so that, to me, is the thing that's really nice about this, is that there's sort of a wave of something that you guys over there have enjoyed for many years on that side of the ocean, which is somebody gives a crap about a consumer. so and about a customer and is standing up for that.
If New York City got them to sign anything for this, that means that, as a metaphor, Verizon are strapped to a leather couch, and New York City has the largest strap-on you've ever seen.
No.
Because that is a ridiculous agreement to enter into.
Well, yeah. Verizon said they could do it. They say they've met their requirements that all households have fiber available to them, but not everybody can buy fiber service. So they're like, oh, we did it. And yeah, they kind of didn't. And so for me, this is just another instance where somebody is standing up to someone who is trying to screw a consumer. And in the United States, this is a rarity. And so I want to applaud New York City and Mayor Bill de Blasio doing this, because this is one of those things where I'm really, you know, you guys get this all the time and we don't. And so it's kind of a big deal.
Is this fiber to the box or is this fiber to the door?
I think it's supposed to be to the door because they said household.
Jesus Christ.
That's huge.
That's the stupidest freaking choice anyone's ever made.
Well, we can't do it here. We've never got to the door here, have we? It's always the cabinet.
Right, you missed off the, and we're loads better than you on the internet statement.
Well, no, but like from a fundamental perspective, there's a lot more consumer protection and a lot more consumer fairness.
Yeah, absolutely.
On that side. And so to me, the thing that's sort of extra interesting about this is that it was New York City, which, like, to me was sort of funny that, you know, it's going to take, if a government is going to stand up to Verizon, it needs to be the size of New York City in order to do it. Mm. I just thought it was really interesting. And it sounds like when the city went through and was trying to figure out, you know, how far Verizon actually had gotten on all of this, they are failing to respond. They're not doing what they need. Like, they just are flat out falling over on it. And
it's going to be interesting. I mean, Booker in the chat room says, how long is Verizon's nose? But that's going to be a real interesting one to look at in the fine print, because getting it to all five boroughs and getting it to all the households are two entirely different statements. I mean, you talk about it, you know, being at the 5 points or something of New York, then that's an entirely different proposition. It seems a stupid offer to make.
If it's to the door, then that is ridiculous, because with Openreach and BT, it's always the cabinet and it's copper to the door, isn't it? That's how they met their targets. Mm. They always go to the box and then it's copper to your door. And that's,
well, even with Virgin, mate.
If you're talking to the door for like a city like New York, it's ridiculous.
But I think that's the thing is the if you look at the connections for Virgin here, I mean, Virgin is as far ahead as it ever was, but mostly because of the work that Diamond Cable and Birmingham Cable did in laying the fibre in the first place. But it's still copper from the box to the door, and we're fairly advanced in comparison.
What are you getting down?
I'm getting 166 down and 15 up. For £48 a month, so $60 a month.
Wow.
Yeah, we're right about the same. I'm 300 down and 20 up now, and it's about, I think retail is about $80 a month, but my condo covers basic, so I get like a $40 off because it's covered by the condo.
Did you say 300 down?
300 down for $80 a month.
300 down, 20 up.
Did you have to give up a first child for that or something?
No, they, you know, honestly, they just changed it. It used to be Time Warner Cable was the biggest piece of in the whole planet, but they got a new CEO in January, and somebody got high with him and beat him over the head or held him to the gun or something, but he came out and he's nice, and they're about customer service, and they went and tripled all of our bandwidth for free, and they're rolling it around the country slowly. Hawaii happened to be the third place to get it.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a question here from Rob in the chat room saying how much of London is fibre to the box. A fair old bit, I would have said, but there would still be an awful lot more can be done. I think it's a fair stab. And Chris Campion says, did they let the legal intern have a go at working on that agreement that week?
Yeah, so when you see this kind of thing happens, that means somebody got busted in Lewinsky, and so they told the CEO, hey, you got to do this, or we're going to tell about your Lewinsky incident. and then all the problems get fixed
overnight. What I liked about this, so the funny thing, Doc, you were saying that all of a sudden all of your speeds tripled. We have found that Comcast has rolled out a couple of speed bumps here in Portland because CenturyLink started offering gigabit speed. And then also every time there's another wave of we're getting Google Fiber, every time that rumor makes another round because somebody filed paperwork or something, Comcast goes and ups everybody's speeds. You know, look at me, I'm so pretty. Even though you don't get a choice.
You know, and even though Google isn't actually there.
They're not here yet. But the last time it happened, my speed went up. I don't know what I'm getting now, but they nudged everybody's bandwidth up when it looked like we were going to get Google Fiber. So I just thought the thing that was interesting to me was that this investigation really shined a spotlight on a bunch of stuff that Verizon was not doing. Not what they're doing. that part isn't it. It's clearly what they're not doing. They're not consistently documenting service requests. This was my favorite, is that they absolutely record and track all of the things, all of the complaints and issues and contacts that they get from paying customers. But all the people who called Verizon because they wanted to give them money for fiber, none of that stuff got tracked. Whenever they did get requests for service, that 75% of the more than 40,000 non-standard requests, so buildings that had not been previously wired for Fios, there were 40,000 of those requests, and 75% of them at the end of December of last year had been outstanding for over a year.
Mm.
So that means people were filing in 2012 and are still waiting. And I find this a stupendous amount of failure on Verizon's part. And I feel like if there was a similar agreement being investigated in any major metropolitan area in the United States, all of this kind of stuff would be reported. And here's the thing, is that it wouldn't have to be Verizon. You could probably do this same report about Comcast in Portland. You could do it about Time Warner in Austin. You could do it about CenturyLink in Chicago. It doesn't matter. And that, to me, is the part of this that's sort of interesting. I feel like this is cracking something open that maybe shining some light on might make a fundamental change, you know, down the road, like as net neutrality stuff comes into being and starts to get enforced, as things like this agreement start to really get investigated. And wait, you said you were going to do this and we're going to hold you to it. We're not going to just let you get away with it because you're Verizon. I really am interested in what this is going to mean in another, say, 5 years or maybe 10 for consumers in the United States.
Comments in the chat room. Richard Dummer says, I'm getting 6 down and 0.45 up, and it cost me $53 a month. And SwatRat says, I've got Comcast Business Internet. It's 50 megabits a second, and it's costing me $110 a month. No caps, which is good since my son and I use the heck out of it.
Well, yeah.
Hey, Richard, that's because you're in Kentucky, mate. They're still using coffee cans and wire down there.
Easy.
True.
Easy.
Hey, he's my homeboy. He knows the joke. He used to live in Hawaii, too, actually.
Yeah.
Chris Cammy says, I get 25 down and 11 up for £10 per month on Sky Fiber. But it's not Sky, and it's Fiber, dude.
You're getting it anyway.
It is neither Sky nor Fiber.
Yeah, it's not Sky. It's not Fiber, and it's not clever. Shush.
That's does Verizon have a stranglehold over like cities, not like New York? Obviously, I know in America that certain companies have strangleholds over different regions. Is Verizon kind of the primary in New York?
That I don't know. I'm not sure what kind of options you get in New York. It sort of seems like...
Maybe
it's big enough and it's been around long enough that kind of all bets are off when it comes to there. So I honestly couldn't tell you.
No, I was just doing a test for where I live right now in obviously in the UK, and I've got 17 different providers I can choose from at different speeds.
But you haven't.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I haven't, but obviously different.
Because they're either coming through BT or they're coming through a proprietary laid down fiber service.
And that's the thing. And you're dead solid about that. In New York, it's a similar situation. There's probably about 30. But the truth of the matter is there's really four because they're at the base of everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. If you backtrack far enough. Now, here's the thing, though, is that most of the United States, if you have a choice, it's between two. If you have a choice, most places for high-speed internet, there's one.
Yeah, Booker in the chat was just saying New York isn't the problem. It's smaller towns that have only got one or two high-speed internet connections that really get screwed up. Yeah.
So like a place like where any member of my family lives, they basically have one option. And if they don't like that option, then they can go back to dial-up. That's really, you know, that's their choice is...
Go back to AOL.
Yeah, Comcast or 56K, you know.
Rob in the chat room says, it was such a good conversation. You got me so involved, I burnt my steak.
Oh.
But based on its deep south, in Bookery says Cajun blackened steak then, obviously.
Of course.
Yeah, there we go. Good story, mate. Good story. Lots of debate there, considering there was sod all to do with anyone on this side of the pond. Righty boy, what have you got for us, mate?
Well, I want to talk about the big changes that have come on at Microsoft this week.
Oh.
If you've heard of them.
Yes.
Let's hear them.
Well, Satya Nadella, obviously we're probably just a month and a bit away from Windows 10 coming out, but he's had a bit of a cabinet reshuffle, and a lot of prominent names have disappeared from the board, most notably Stephen Elop, who was the basically in charge of devices, and he's gone out the door because obviously he was a Trojan horse that went over to Nokia, and then a couple of years later Microsoft ended up buying Nokia, but he's now walking out the door. So basically they've merged the two merged the teams that do operating systems and devices, and Terry Myerson's taken over. So they're looking at after all the things like Surface, Xbox, Lumia, HoloLens, all that sort of thing. And it seems that like Nokia has kind of been like devoured in the same way that HP devoured Palm. You know, they've absolutely sucked it up. But they're kind of saying the reason we're doing this is to align our strategy with our align our structure with our strategy. And obviously they go for this one kind of operating system rules them all across all the devices because they're talking about, you know, Windows 10 on Xbox and TVs and phones and everything else. And I was wondering, has, you know, obviously with the Nokia brand going away, will they be able to keep the kind of legacy of that brand going? But are they kind of looking at companies like Apple, who obviously are very... very controlling along their hardware and their operating systems, and finally admitting that the success of flagship devices kind of hangs around you actually developing your own hardware and your own software, because Windows is obviously, they have to do it for all modes of hardware, all different tablets, hybrids, all those sort of things. Are they kind of thinking right now, we actually need to control our own destiny the same way that Apple do, and kick out the people who are the Steve Ballmer kind of regime and move forward? Because Satya Nadella is looking at obviously a new Microsoft where their products are on all operating systems and they are moving forward. The strange thing for me before I finish is obviously we're only a month and a half away from Windows 10. Is it a bit late to be doing this?
I think it's a smart move what they've done, especially... Mm-hmm. Bring in Xbox under there too, because, you know, in my kind of eyes, I think Xbox is their strongest brand.
Yeah.
And from what you're saying, that they've brought Xbox Xbox and the phones all into one, and the software all into one one division.
All hardware, yeah.
Just like Apple did with Johnny Ive, didn't they? With bringing the hardware and software in line. Like you said, it's, you know, they're obviously looking over at Apple and seeing kind of what they're doing and how it's working out for them, and not so much copying, but just kind of following that lead, I guess. It's interesting. I think it's a smart move what they've done.
Hmm. The worry is for the partners who are looking at this and thinking, well, Microsoft might be looking into their own hardware, and in the same way that not a lot of people make Windows phones anymore, will there be a lot of the market for people making Windows laptops anymore?
That's a good question.
Because they're looking at it and going, okay, you're going to actually combine all your hardware into one division and your OS into one division. You know, you own Xbox. You know, people are raving about HoloLens, Lumia. It's a struggling phone platform at the moment. But you know, your HPs, your Dells are going to look at this and going, do we actually need to run your operating system on our devices anymore? Because you're almost combining everything in within your own kind of unit and concentrating on what you're going to do, not what's going to come out to us.
Well, Microsoft are fully in on the Surface, aren't they? Which is, that's their own well, they make their own hardware, don't they, for the Surface?
Yeah, and it's been very, especially where I work, you know, and I've seen the debate, it's a very successful piece of kit. It's not something that I'd choose to use, but a lot of people think it is very good. And I think there's going to be a Surface laptop coming out very soon and all of those sort of things. But, you know, Microsoft is trying to regain the cool now with like being on Android and being on iOS and all of those sort of things. But if I was a vendor who relied on Microsoft for the operating system, I'd be quite worried right now.
Well, you know, one thing that I guess in a way, you could actually see more makers making phones now with Nokia sliding out. And then Nokia is going to go back to still making phones. I don't know if they'll get completely, you know, removed from Microsoft per se, but it'd be kind of cool to see ACC and some other people jump in and start making more Windows phones. Because I think currently the best operating system device combination, just if you were to look at it minus all the ecosystem, is actually some of the stuff that's on Microsoft phone. The problem is the ecosystem hasn't had the opportunity to grow to where it's fully functional yet, but it has the most promise. And you know, with Nokia, I guess sort of separating and getting out of the way, it might actually make it bigger and better. This could be a very, very good move for just handsets in general. And Kelly always says, the better that these guys do, then the better we get, because we get the cool stuff because they got to make sure that they're on their toes and they can't get complacent.
Yeah, but what I've seen in the growth of Microsoft is, especially in this country, I don't know, even in the States, is the thing like the Lynx tablets, the Windows tablets are £60-70. And there's been a huge growth in those. And people are really, really happy with them. And they're not Microsoft products. These are kind of companies you never heard of before making products that are running Windows 8.1, and Microsoft's not making the money off them because actually they're giving away their operating system for free. So obviously Microsoft's at the high end. Are they trying to bring, you know, where they were giving away their operating system at the low end, are they trying to bring the high end back to Microsoft?
So I think what they'll end up doing is you get the halo effect kind of thing, one. But then the other thing that's they've been recently, as you discussed, came out this week, is they're also working into some deals with your IBM style. Let me do the solutions and app for you, and all you do is provide the hardware. Like, I know for a fact, when I was in China last October, I visited a factory that makes Windows tablets for Spain and Brazil. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at getting some 30,000 tablets made for a deal. We're working in Manila, and I can literally get a Surface built for, I think it came out to like $69 US for a functioning, pretty decent quality Surface built. So that's why you see these Lynx and these other companies come out, because the hardware isn't necessarily the expensive part. And if you listen to iSupply as they take apart phones, I mean, yeah, they're relatively cheap. They're not counting research and development and all of that stuff. So the way Microsoft would do it is let this stuff go on so that you could generate a halo effect. And, you know, you can sort of work it into sort of popularity again, because then now schools can get at it and, you know, smaller businesses can get at it. And I think in the end, you end up bringing yourself back into favor and becoming a bigger part of the conversation, which they had lost to some extent until Satya Nadella came back in. And yes, I said that on purpose for the person who commented last week.
I think this is interesting, because I wonder how much of this is just Nadella sort of paving the way for the new order. You know, like, remember not too long after Tim took over, we had a variety of shakeups on Mahogany Row in Cupertino. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be surprising. And I wonder if part of it is just that some of those guys were not taking competition seriously, whatever competition that may be. You know, some of those guys, maybe they were still 100% on, you know, the Balmer train, and that train kind of doesn't run on these tracks anymore. So I think it may have also just been some evolution. You know, we've seen a little bit of evolution happening at Apple. This is just another mark of sort of the 2.0 now that the people who built the company aren't the people who are shepherding it anymore. And yeah. I really like his approach. One of the things that I think that Nadella has done that's interesting is we want our stuff on all the screens, even if we didn't make them. And yeah. It's like the first time in history Microsoft has been aware that there was another company out there and that maybe they weren't the only game in town. And I really like that they're sort of taking that and owning it. And I'm really hopeful that maybe something good will come out of this on their end, because, you know, as we've seen forever, you know, it's exactly the same thing that happened on Android, which is, you know, if you buy a new piece of hardware and you want to hook it up to your Windows machine, if you have an HP, download this driver. If you have a Dell, download this driver. If you have a whatever else, download this driver. Like, and on down that list. And the fractiousness of that platform has been a nightmare for years. And I know that because I spent most of those years married to somebody who was trying to troubleshoot all of that crap. And it's a nightmare if you build your own machine. And it's a slightly different flavor of nightmare if you go buy one off the shelf. It's not better. It's still a nightmare. It just comes at you from a different way. So it's kind of a bummer. And I really hope that something like this might help make some of that better. Similar to what we saw at Google I.O. when they were talking about extending the Android One initiative and how they were trying to unify some of that stuff and make some of this a little more standard. I'm really hoping the same thing comes to the PC market. We're way beyond the point where this stuff should be a commodity and it shouldn't be a big deal what graphics card you put in. And, you know, getting a copy of Windows activated or whatever, like all of that stuff sort of needs to age out and go away so that they can really evolve into whatever the next thing is going to be. Mm-hmm. And with what I've seen of Windows 10, I can't wait to see what that is.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah.
But the one thing I'm thinking is obviously that they're betting the farm on one operating system. And I think years before it was kind of looking like Apple were going to, the convergence of iOS and OS 10 were going to be coming together a lot sooner than they thought. But obviously, Apple are keeping those very separate at the moment. There's obviously a lot of like linking at the moment, but Microsoft is the first company to go all in with one operating system on everything. Do you think that would actually be a workable solution?
No, I think it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I've always thought that was a terrible idea. That was part of what I didn't like about Windows 8. I don't like that they think one size fits all as long as all of their devices are still different. Because there's a smaller touchscreen and a slightly larger touchscreen, and then there's a touchscreen that you can slap a keyboard onto, and all of those require different interface ideas and different interface mechanisms, and I don't think one size fits all when it comes to that. You know, I use my computer with my keyboard, my laptop that has a keyboard. I use that for some stuff. And I use my phone for some stuff. And I use my iPad for some stuff. And that's all different stuff. And there's things I do on my computer that I could do on the others, but it would take a lot longer. And some of it isn't even possible. Some of the stuff I like to do on my phone is not possible on my laptop. So it's all sort of what approach you're going to take. And I find it really confounding that they would make after doing all these things right for so long, that they would do something so tone deaf without having sort of different flavors. I can understand it being the same OS. You know, when you get down to the core of it, Mac OS and iOS are the same. They're built on the same technology, the same core foundation. It's just that there's different pieces of it that get distributed depending on what you're putting it on. And I would like to see Windows go that same route where you have the full-on laptop experience with a screen and a keyboard, and then maybe the Surface is a slightly different flavor where it's got a keyboard, but you can touch it. And then there's just the touchscreen only iteration with the phones and the tablets. I would like to see that be an option so that you get the right interaction for the thing that you have in front of you.
Mm. Great.
Good story. The chat room's coming in with some show titles. Who lopped off Elop? And Elop eloped. So, there we go. Very good. Excellent stuff. Now, before we go further, we've got some hot news. Before I do my story, we've got some really hot news for you. Because you know that Macfun are kind of like a little bit support for us last week. We'll come to that in a minute. But Macfun have given us a fantastic surprise, which I'll talk to you about in a second. But this is hot off the press. This is like an hour old, I promise you. What they have done is released today a brand new version of Tonality. Now, if you haven't had a go with Tonality, you should, because it's like acid for your black and white photos, effectively. I mean, there's loads of preset plugins. There's also brushes in there, so you can make tonal changes within the black and white photo in key areas that you want to bring back in. I think it's compatible with Photoshop. I think it's compatible with Lightroom already. But what's interesting is they've released a new version today. So it's a brand new version. There are 7 extra presets that go in for it. It has full compatibility with Force Touch as well. So now when you when you use your brushes, you've got Force Touch capabilities to change the touch effectiveness of that brush on the black and white image that you're looking at. It's got full support for Apple Photos as well, and it supports all raw image standards, and also it supports Adobe Lightroom for definite in the new version as well as. And it's really, really well worth having a go at. So please, please, please get along and send a message to Macfun and tell them that you're excited about this and download it and have a free trial, because it is there for you to try. The other thing that's there for you to try is focus. And if you like focus, this is the ability to kind of add depth of field to your images when it's not actually there to start with. So you can shoot with your bog standard lens, you know, your 3.5 to 5.6 that you got with your camera, but actually it'll allow you to put a lot of shallow depth of field into the image that you've got. And I know a few people have downloaded and had a go with it, because there is a copy of Focus 2 for every single listener to BTN.
Yes.
If you are a listener of British Tech Network, then you will get a copy of Focus 2 free of charge. Plain and simple. Go to macfun.com, that's macfun.com /BTN, and claim your free copy. All you've got to do is send them your name and your email, and they will send you a brand new copy, plain and simple. And if you've got multiple email addresses, you can send in multiple made-up names, and they will send you multiple copies of it. They'll send as many as you like. The only thing I would ask is when we get responses, the thing that we rely on is the fact that the sponsors can visibly see that you guys are reacting to it. So please, please, please send an email, or better still, send out a tweet or a Facebook message to @WeAreMacFun on Twitter and say, thanks so much for my free copy of Focus, because and supporting BTN, because without that, you know, we're utterly lost. And I think it's kind of just polite, really, isn't it? If someone's going to give you something that's that good free of charge, it would be nice to just write back and say, cheers, mate. That's very kind. So, yeah, please send out a tweet or an email or a Facebook message to Macfun and just say thank you very much for that. But you get a free copy, macfun.com/BTN. It is yours. It is yours to keep. And it's wholly yours. There's no caveats where it disappears after 30 days or any of that kind of stuff. It's absolutely yours. Thank you, Macfun. We do appreciate it. Kevin and all the people down there. And I hope the new Tonality goes well. Please try that out as well, because I've got to say, I've had a little play myself and it is superb, although I haven't really mastered it as yet, unfortunately. My story was quite an interesting one, because there is a European court ruling that has occurred that says that comments held on a website are the responsibility of the website to control and are not just open forum where anyone can post anything they like. You cannot do that. A new ruling from the European Court of Human Rights has found it perfectly acceptable to hold websites responsible for comments left by users. Discuss.
Well, personally, as somebody who runs a blog, I think it's perfectly reasonable to moderate comments on my site. You know, I that's something I just do as a matter of course, to be honest.
Yeah. We do the same thing. I mean, all of our comments are moderated.
You know, I used to at one point believe in the fact that you leave them naked and let the community hash it out. It used to be at one point back on the blog that is no longer here. Let's pour out a little liquor. I used to not respond to the weirdos on my posts and just kind of let them just have at it, because normally the fandom would come in and take care of it. They would kind of shush the person or send them packing. But then it got to the point where it was so nerve-wracking that the fandom wouldn't even bother. They would just tend to ignore them. And it used to be like, well, if there's any movement on the post, it's actually good for you. But it got so bad, you had to start turning it off. So you had to really pay attention. Some of the writers got so, like, Kayla would even enable comments. He would just turn them off because he didn't want to even deal with it. And I was like, that was taken away from the, I guess, the fun part of the post at one point. And I won't say it led ultimately to our demise, but it definitely helped slow traffic down when the writers would get so upset. They just stopped even leaving on posts. And I don't know. I just wish people would stop being such jerks. That's the hard part.
It's a cesspool, isn't it? YouTube's had the same problem where they've had to add people as their Google Plus links to post comments. I think a couple of years ago, Engadget had to shut down their entire comment system because of the dirge that was going in there. I think that the site holder should be responsible for what is posted on their site.
But that becomes quite hard then, because you're talking about, you know, full-time jobs. You look at 2 billion uploads a day to Twitter, to YouTube, and then you talk about the quantity of commentary that must take place against that. It must be massive. I mean, I don't know if you'd actually physically be able to do that.
But yeah, it definitely would be hard to do.
Putting some sort of, well, metrics, or, you know, if you're a big site, then, you know, not someone like me, you know, just I've got a blog, you know, I don't get the, obviously kind of get the kind of traffic as your Engadgets and stuff, but surely there must be some kind of differentiating factor for the big sites versus the smaller sites. I don't know. I mean, for someone like myself or smaller kind of sites, it is quite easy to maintain comments and build a community, I think, if you've got a small kind of community that follow you, but I don't know how the big sites would manage it.
It just seems kind of crazy that, like, well, yeah, YouTube, I guess they do have some responsibility, but, you know, if they went around pruning content, and of course there is a threshold, but there will be something that's kind of on the threshold but not on the threshold, and it will get pruned and everybody would get mad that they're controlling it. Right now everyone's mad that they're not controlling it, so it's kind of a double-edged sword. Like, this stuff really doesn't bother me until somebody like winds you up. And when they wind you up, then you're going to be mad and be like, oh, they should control it. And the truth of the matter is, this is not a problem with the sites. For a large portion, it's a problem with, I don't know, parents not teaching their kids right from wrong. A lot of it just comes from kids. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think if, you know, younger, if I was doing that kind of stuff, like, my mom would peel my skin off. But now, like, parents can't even do certain things to their kids to make them behave because everyone's watching them too. Like, it's a really, really trippy kind of double-edged sword at this point. Like, where does it all begin?
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. I mean, you look at a lot of the kids that I see through my son's school, and actually, most of the kids are fairly good kids. There's a few that are real arseholes.
Yeah, it's only but they are, what do you call, like, a beacon? Like, if you're in a dark room and there's that one cell phone with the light on, you see it. So you're dead right. I think it's very small, but they're so loud.
But they sit down and they just, and there's other kids that I think they'll just do it because they can get away with it, because no one actually ever goes, oi. And that's the thing, is if people leave pointed comments, I always make sure that they've got an email address, and I always reply to the email address. If it's like, no, this is a bullshit email address, the comment just doesn't get posted and that's the end of it. So it you know, it's self-censoring in that way. But I also, if people leave a comment that needs a bit of a slap, I'll give them one quite happily. No, that's not
I feel
okay.
It got better once they started the connection to Google Plus. The sad part is that Google Plus is slowly working its way into the darkness. Like, how are they going to keep up? And it is still so easy to spoof it when you happen to also own the service that allows you to make an email address with like 5 minutes worth of work. So they tried to make it better with Google Plus, but it doesn't help that Gmail is at the basis of it. So there still has to be a way. Like, I would like to go to a site that has all of this great information, but everyone has to submit a driver's license in order to one, you cut down on the young people just being goofy for no reason. And two, everyone would be held accountable. But, you know, that site doesn't exist anywhere. But I'm sure there's a startup somewhere working on it.
Actually, it sort of does. There's a neighborhood social network that I'm signed up for here in Portland, and it's called Next Door. And there's a variety of, I mean, it's nationwide. They have them all over the place. But
I signed up for that.
But you sign up for your own neighborhood, and you have to send them, I think the way it works is you have to send them your mailing address. And then they mail you a card, and that card has like a pin on it, and that's what you use to verify your account.
Yeah, we got one in the UK called Street Life as well. Yeah. Same thing.
And that's what they do to actually verify that you live where you say that you live, so that you can be part of the network. They're doing it, you know, from a good place. It's so that you're part of the network you're supposed to be part of, so that you're in the right neighborhood and all of that. So that if I'm reporting, you know, somebody lost a cat and I found pieces of it in my backyard, I'm reporting it to the right neighborhood, which actually happened, by the way. It was kind of gross. So that's the kind of stuff that you can verify if you really want to, but I think there's probably a resistance to that if you work on any other sort of website, you know, like with technology and stuff. Like, I want to comment right now, you know, and so it's one of the nice things about like two-factor authentication is that at least if they have to text you a verification code, there's a phone number tied to your account for however long that may be. Like, it's better than nothing. And even sometimes just that barrier is super useful in trying to weed out some of this stuff.
Thing is, it's better than it used to be. Remember guest books in the 90s on websites?
Oh, oh my God.
That was real dirge, wasn't it?
Yep.
That's super funny.
So are we saying that we think that all websites should all be held responsible for all comments made by users all the time?
I can't say that unequivocally just yet, but it is definitely something that I would wish for.
Well, that's what the European ruling's saying. It's saying all websites all the time, always responsible for all comments.
We have this this irking thing in the USA called freedom, which is slightly overrated. we have the equivalent of
freedom from anyone
of Android's like open operating system. Everybody can do what they want until they get caught or somebody doesn't like it, and now it's kind of a thing. So yeah, unfortunately that's not going to fly here, but I wish it would.
Yeah guys, Lee and Righty.
I think if you allow, you know, it's the same with us on BTN. If you're allowing content on your site that you're putting there, and also we have a system on the site that we approve comments, you know, I know, like I say, it's a bigger problem for the bigger sites. But I think everyone should be held accountable to the thing that they published on their site. If it's along with the post that you've put online, then yes, you should be held responsible for what people say, especially if it's offensive or hurtful to other people.
If it's a blog-based system, whoever posts the post should be responsible for moderating the comments, and that's doable.
Yeah. And I think that's the way it should be, because it goes along with the content, it's related to the content. If it's offensive and unrelated, obviously you don't let that be published.
But that doesn't work on YouTube.
It is the site's responsibility to do it.
That doesn't work on YouTube, though, because I post the video, I could choose not to go back and comment it, or should I moderate my own comments? And then you're looking at, well, if I post something that goes viral, all of a sudden there's just me on my own now. Should I take all the money that I earn from my YouTube clicks and my advertising, and I have to pay someone to go through and manually control all of the stuff? I think YouTube's a different animal to a certain degree.
Well, you just
blog post.
YouTube, if you're going to, you know.
Yeah.
It's just the size of it, you know, on the day-to-day kind of things, the blogs and things, especially stuff we do, then it's easy to control. You look at things like YouTube and the bigger news sites, and yeah, there's, you know, you look at a lot of news sites and there's some really hurtful, horrible things that people say to each other, you know. There's some real nasty stuff that people go on, and it's not being moderated, but I think that should be, that should be curtailed, and people should do something about it.
Definitely. You want to hear what my son says about me?
Well,
if you ever want to be entertained, go to, and this is a so really sad, and I'm sorry that it still happens in this day and age, go to any story where a police officer did something untoward to, say, a pertinent person of ethnic diversity, and then go read the comments. It's gotten so bad to the point where there's actually memes of, I'm just here to read the comments. Like, do a Google image search on, I'm just here to read the comments, and see the pictures that people post in these, because you can kind of be entertained at how stupid some people still are at this day and age. And just to sort of strengthen your skin to the weird things that people will still say. It's mind boggling.
Yeah. But there's some really nasty things going on in comments. I can't remember what I was reading the other day, but a lady said something on one of the newspaper websites in this country, and in the comments, not only did they kind of have a go at her, but they went and found her Facebook page and published pictures of her, and just said horrible things about her. And she just passed comment on something, and because people didn't agree with her, they kind of started a witch hunt about her and published personal information about her online and all those sort of things. And that sort of stuff really does need to be controlled.
So just, I know we're talking about this one, but if you think about something like Mac Rumors, where they're a forum rather than I know they have got a blog aspect, but you know, mainly you've got the forum. Are they saying that if, say, that was a UK site, say, for instance, then they would be held responsible for everything that goes on in the forum as well?
Well, there's nothing to say that the EU doesn't have reaching powers that could deal with any US site that was read in the UK or had a comment posted in the UK. So it doesn't exempt anyone by the location of their blogging process.
If it's accessible in the EU, then yes, they should be responsible by that law.
I kind of like Jufro Jem's comment about like some sort of national ID card, where all online accounts have to be set up to verify a user in that way against their ID card and password. I think that would be really awesome. I just don't think it would work. And the hard part about a quote-unquote national ID card is that doesn't cover the multi-nations.
Dude,
it would be in one nation only.
Dude, George Orwell wrote a novel about that.
Yeah, he did.
Exactly what you just described there. Exactly what Jim's just described. That was freaking George Orwell.
Yeah, and there's also a great commercial back in 1984 Super Bowl.
Oh, shit. Apple fanboy, Jesus Christ. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2, as you know. Now, UK2 are fantastic. They give us all the bandwidth, all the space that we need, all the storage. And you can get every show we've ever done as British Tech Network, and quite a few that we've done back in the days when we were Bagel Tech, long ago. So if you'd like to check out UK2, they've got tons of stuff available. BritishTechNetwork.com/sponsors, and you get all the links that you can get, and you get loads of reductions as well as from UK2. Check them out for anything that's web-based. And if you switch off because you're in the US and you go, oh, well, you know, UK2 or UK2, but not to do with the US, then check out 100TB.com, because they're the people who give us the server that does the live broadcast. So 100TB will give us a server, the one that we're using, $139 a month. And we are live to the world with a 2-second delay because we've got distributed content management on it. So you can get the server that we use for $139 per month, plain and simple. So all you US listeners out there, don't switch off to the UK2 stuff, because 100TB are right up your street if you want your own dedicated server. And it's superb. They also do shared management of it as well. So some of your content can be hosted over on this side of the pond as well to speed up access. UK2's data centres. So check them out. They're absolutely fantastic. And thanks ever so much to them for their support, because we really would be lost without them. Absolutely. Right. It's time for the cool thing. Get those links in the chat room then, chaps. Lee, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So I've been trying to test some Bluetooth headphones lately for, you know, and be doing a lot of walking and stuff. I've got, you know, the Apple Watch and on my phone, just something that would work on both. And I picked up these. These are the LG Tone. These ones are the Infinum, I think they're Harman Kardon kind of special edition type ones, but they've got them reduced at the moment. Sorry, I won't say where they're from. You only know where I'm going to say. But they last for about 4 or 5 days. And
continuous use?
They sit around your neck, which is a bit strange. And they've got the earbuds pull out on these like little cables. I don't know if you can see that on the camera. And then you just pop them in. But one really cool thing as well is, if I can get them off, you've got these little buttons here, and they just whip straight back into the body of them. I'm not sure how robust they are, because they are quite kind of plasticky, but they're really comfortable. They sound good. They've got the telephone stuff built in as well, so they've got all the, you can use it as a proper Bluetooth headset if you don't want to use it just for music. And if you've got Android, that you can get kind of text message notifications and stuff on them. I've not been able to test that, but I don't really miss not having that, to be honest, but I definitely recommend.
That's kind of a cool idea, because I mean, in the winter that could go underneath a coat, couldn't it?
Well, that's what I do. Yeah, I've been using them. I put them under my jacket or under my jumper, and my phone's in my pocket, and I've just got these. You know, they're really comfortable, to be honest. I know they look a bit strange. It does take a couple of days to get used to them, but I forget I'm wearing them sometimes. I'll be wearing them for hours and just forget I've got them on.
So if you want them in silver, it's $65.99. If you want them in gold, it's an extra £25 for gold plastic over silver plastic. That's bollocks. Nice. I won't buy them just on the bullshit of that.
I didn't realise they were doing that.
Good grief. That's a bit of piss.
I think I paid more than the 60. I think I must have paid the 99. I bought them a few weeks ago.
Have you got a gold pair or a silver pair?
Silver.
Oh, you got done, mate. Send them back. But they do look good. Well done. Even though you've broken the prime rule.
Sorry. I can do that. You're going to ban me soon.
No. Yeah, you've cost me a fortune since you started coming on the shows. Can't stand. Doc, what have you got for us, mate?
All right, I got two. The first one is free. Everyone has to watch it. It's a parody on Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but it's Mr. and Mrs. Sith. It is pretty freaking hilarious. And yet, so well done. So that YouTube link is right in there, right above.
Let's play a bit of that, because that looks, does look excellent.
Yeah. It is pretty freaking awesome. So well done.
Put it to full screen. I'm trying to work out which scene this is. From the real movie.
You'll get it in a second.
Is this the one where they fight and then they end up shooting the fridge to pieces?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
First of all, the costumery is just insane.
It is.
Not to mention she's a fit bird.
I've got to say, the horns are doing it for me.
There you go, Batwin, so you don't think we're being misogynistic.
Oh, I love the little flick there with the fingers. Spot on. Superb.
I mean, somebody's been seriously practicing their katana technique, because, I mean, they got saber skills.
Yeah, this is bananas.
This is really good.
I'm in.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Sorry, I felt like Gwen Stefani.
It's not fair, because he is still wearing more fabric than her, though. I want equality, says Batwinch.
Zip it, Winch.
And Deep Pan says that Lee broke the Prime directive. It's very good. Very, very good.
Oh, you can't do that. I believe under Channel 2, you can get into some of the back work, like how they did it. But yeah. Yeah, I prefer to buy foreign violins, Mueller Biker. Domestic violins don't have the same tonality. Anyway, well, pretty cool. And then my second pick is really simple, but it's something that I just ordered. I found this on Uncrate, but it's basically a book called Whiskey Notes. And it's a book for people who are into like drinking and like understanding your whiskey a little bit better, taking some notes so you can know what you're doing. But they also have some notes if you want to get into doing some distillery of your own. You can write down, you know, your processes and like what you did to tweak it, or if you added a little, you know, like hemlock or something to it, like whatever it takes to get your family recipe out. It's just a cool little thing if you're into whiskey.
Adding hemlock would get your family out.
Huh?
Adding hemlock would get your family out.
Yeah, and I'm joking. Please don't add hemlock. This is a public service announcement from the BTN network.
BTN cares.
Yes, BTN cares.
Muller says the video died, but I don't think it has. We're all right at this end.
Yeah, I can see everything fine.
Yeah, okay. Just ignore him. It's just Muller. Brilliant. Superb. Excellent, mate. Kelly, you haven't put anything in the chat room, woman.
No, sorry. This one I know I didn't do. Okay, so here's my... I also have two picks. This is my first pick because I just got one of these. It was from Alt, the Alt conference. They had this water bottle, so I got it. And here's why it's cool. Is first of all, the whole thing will dismantle. So you can take it apart and you can put it on the top rack of the dishwasher. But here's the one thing that's interesting about it is it's got this little clipping deal here. And you can put your credit card and your key in to this little flappy area and hold it all here, which I think is super handy. So if you're taking it running or, if you like the thing that I thought.
And you want to buy a pizza on the way.
Well, if you want to take your license with you or you have a Starbucks card or whatever and your house key, you can stick them in there. The other thing that I found out people were using that was super awesome was we got these at AltConf. A lot of people were staying at hotels. And so you can put your hotel key in here, take your water bottle down to the gym and, you know, get on the treadmill or do whatever you want to do. And you can, and all you have to have with you is your water bottle, which is super awesome. The thing that's great about this is you can tell there's liquid in here, right? And it's got this, the way you get the liquid out is you press the button here as you drink. And yet when I'm not pressing the button, nothing happens. This is super important when you're somebody like me who has been known to knock a water bottle off a desk or likes to keep a big bunch of liquid near a laptop. This is a super awesome feature.
So does that mean that the gravity has to act to get it in your gob, though, or is the tube to suck up?
No, when you push it, the thing just opens, and so you can just pour it down. You don't have to slurp on it or anything.
So it's gravity-based.
So, yeah. So this thing just moves out of the way so you can actually get the water out, which is slightly different than the Camelback bottle that I have. Anyway, the other thing I like about this is you can cover it up completely. It's got this little flippy top that is a carabiner clip. So you can hook it to your backpack if you're walking around San Francisco all day.
Jesus, this has got Geek Girl written all over it.
Oh, yeah. It does, doesn't it? And super durable plastic. I've put more than its share of water through it in the last few days as I sit here disabled. And it never gets that gross plasticky smell or taste out of the water bottle. So the plastic is awesome. And I know I'm violating the Prime Directive, but at least the US version is $12.99.
It's very good. Very good. Yeah.
So, and then my bonus pick for the week is, since I'm not on the Mac show, I'm going to have a Mac pick, and that is Text Expander 5 because it's awesome. The first thing it will do is you can build JavaScript into a snippet and execute it, which is awesome. The big thing that most people are going to notice is that you can sync your snippets anywhere you want. So it doesn't have to just be that one folder in Dropbox anymore. And it all works with some updates to the iOS version. The iOS version has a little bit of extra stuff too. There's inline search, which is awesome. And also suggestions. So if there's something that you type a lot, it will notice it and pop up in the notification center and say, hey, you typed this a bunch of times, which can lead to hilarity. And it will give you the opportunity to build that into a snippet if you want to. And it will also remind you that you already have a snippet for that thing that you just finished typing.
Excellent. Muller in the chat room says that Costco sell these, but I don't think they do myself, to be honest. But never mind. That's great. I'll have a look in Costco next time I see one. And did you ever see that guy that's the absolute insane runner? He's like the Forrest Gump of running. He just starts running and he keeps running and running and running and running. And he's made millions out of like energy drinks and, you know, that Max kind of powder, protein powder type stuff.
Oh, right.
And he decides to go running and he just basically takes a credit card with him. And he'll as he's running through a town, he'll note a pizza number down. He'll pull his cell phone out and he'll ring the pizza people and they meet him. And he takes a 12-inch pizza and he rolls it up into a baton and he runs along eating it.
Oh my gosh.
And he carries on running. And he just keeps running. He never stops running. He's a constant runner. So
that's crazy.
I can't remember his name. But Matt, our lawyer, told me about him. He sounds an absolute gimp, but there we go. But he's a rich gimp. Righty, what do you have for us, sir?
Well, not a cool thing that I've found, but a bit of shameless promotion for BTN. Our newsletter that's been released this week. You can go over to britishnetwork.com/newsletter and you can sign up with your email address, and we are going to send you some really fab stuff every single week. All the stuff you've missed on the site, the reviews, the blogs, the shows, all the great offers we get from MacFun, all those sort of things. Get over there, sign up. We get an email, obviously, to verify the link, and then we'll send you some really fab stuff every single week.
Brilliant. So it automatically updates when we post the shows, doesn't it? But also we can write articles and that kind of stuff in it. So hopefully we're going to put some extra content in and that kind of thing, which will make it really, really cool.
Because it's a thought that on Twitter and stuff, you might miss things now and then when we post them. So a little bit of a weekly digest telling you what we do.
How do you sign up?
BritishTechNetwork.com/newsletter.
There we go. It's on the page. Superb. And the other thing that's coming up as well, subscribe to the newsletter because that is going to be really cool. I promise you that. But the other thing we can get you to come and think about is the bash, please, because it's only 2 weeks.
Yes.
2 weeks tomorrow is the curry. So that's the 3rd of July. And then the 4th of July, the Saturday, is the proper bash itself. And you're going, well, hang on, what's the bash about? Well, if you go to BTN, BritishTechNetwork.com, you'll see there how to buy a bash ticket is on there as well. But you've also got the More Info tab. And if you click on More Info, it'll tell you what the bash is about. And it's just about geeks getting together, all of us. There's no end of different people in there. All walks of life. There's a pile of them bring the kids as well, and the kids just play to themselves in the garden quite happily down at the link at Waterhorn. It is an absolutely incredible venue. It's probably 25 metres square garden, and then we've got about 20 square metres inside the hall itself. I've been to see Leanne, who does the food. And once you've eaten her fudge brownies, mate, you will never, ever eat another brownie and think that it's any good, because they are unbelievably stunning. There's some bins down there that are going to have all the beer and wine and that kind of stuff in that you could possibly want to eat and drink. You don't have to bring anything else but yourself, plain and simple. And Jufro Jim, thanks to him, he's provided Righty with a few pictures, and you can have a look at some of the fun that we have. There'll be silly games during the day. You don't have to take part. You can do if you want to. We'll also have an Oculus Rift there, and it will be side by side with a Google Cardboard, and we will test as to which one is the more advanced of the two. I've got to say, my roller coaster ride on Google Cardboard, unbelievable. I played with it again the other day. I really, really enjoy that. It will be good. So there'll be an Oculus Rift there, and we'll have some chemical wipes as well, so no one gets conjunctivitis. But you can see an Oculus Rift in action with tons of stuff. Thanks to Rob, who's bringing that along with him. Absolutely superb. There's loads to do. There's loads of fun to be had. There's loads and loads of grub, and there's loads and loads of beer and that kind of stuff. So it's just a fun day. Third for the curry, £10 deposit gets you a bit seat at the table, but that comes off your bill, so it's not like we're keeping that. And the £20 for the bash covers absolutely everything. You don't need anything else. Just bring yourself, and away you go. And it is definitely kid-friendly. Rob is from virtualmine.co.uk. Virtual, M-I-N-E, virtualmine.co.uk. Thank you, Rob. We shall see you at the bash. Superb. Right. My cool thing is my new mic, which is a Rode pin mic. Now, you're going to look at me and say on the video and go, well, okay, where is it, Ewan? I'm actually wearing it, but you can't see it. I'm actually wearing my mic. Okay, so what I have to do is turn this way sideways and put my hand here, and then you'll just about see it. There we go. There it is. You can just see it poking up. Little tiny mic here. It's a pin mic. So basically, I can't take it off and show it you, but the actual mic, the condenser part, is on the top. And you pull it off, and the contacts that power it are actually making three little pins that you push through your clothing, and then you put the condenser on the top. And it's absolutely fantastic. It's £139 on Amazon with Prime. I've broken the Prime directive again. But it is absolutely great. And if, as long as you've got black coating, it works just fine. There is a silver one that comes with it as well that you can change over and use if you prefer the silver finish. But it just sits there. And the sound quality is absolutely excellent, I think. I've tried a little test with it this afternoon, and it works really, really well. The only negative is it's got that bloody microdot connection that Rode seem to be obsessed with. And you have to buy an adapter with it, which isn't cheap, and it doesn't fit absolutely everything either. So it's a pain in the arse, but it's okay. It's good. The sound quality is excellent. Well worth the money. And I'll be taking this out on site as well, because it's really easy to set up with people as well. So you can, because more often than not, when you've got a lavelli mic, you've got the kind of, you clip it on and it wingles around left and right and all that kind of stuff. Whereas this just studs through something and then it just picks up the general volume that's around your face. It's really cool. Cool. Where can we get a hold of you, Lee?
So Twitter is at LJPUK. You can find my tech writing at ljpuk.com. I'm also britishtechnetwork.com. And just had some news over the last hour that my blog has been accepted by Apple into the news app for iOS 9.
So excellent.
If you're on iOS 9, and if you do a search for LJPUK, you should see it. Disclaimer, I've not actually got iOS 9 to test it yet. It's going on my iPad tonight to run through and see what it looks like. But yeah, looking forward to giving that a go. So yeah, if you're on iOS 9 and you want to give it a go, let me know. Send me a message on Twitter, or if you can't find it on there, or if you've got any feedback, appreciate any feedback on it. Because like I said, it's all new. It's new to me, new to everybody, I think. The news app. So yeah, appreciate that.
Thank you. Doc, where are you, sir?
You can find me at DOCROCK pretty much anywhere on the Twitterverse and on BTN Network in various pukas and pockets. Puka's the Hawaiian word for hole. And also on MacUser.pro if we ever get our stupid poison DNS fixed.
Okay. Enough said. Kelly, where are you, girl?
I'm on the couch.
Yeah, bad luck, girl. No, Dr. House is on the couch.
Actually, it's the recliner at the moment. You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso, and you can find me hosting The After Show with Mike Rose. Maybe someday I'll get to be on the Mac Show again, right here on the British Tech Network. And the rest of the time, you can find me writing things for the Mac Observer or appearing on the Daily Observation podcast.
Excellent. And last but by no means least, Righty Boy, where are you?
Hello, mate. Paul's on Twitter and always BritishNetwork.com.
Good man. Thank you very much. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. The Big Show will be back next Thursday, 8 p.m. as normal, with more news and more hot stuff. Get yourself a bash ticket, because you haven't got long until we cut it all off. And also get yourself the MacFun software at macfun.com/BTN for Focus, because that will be disappearing. That is a limited time offer only. It will disappear next Friday. So make sure you download now, okay? Thanks very much. That hurt. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.